Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Special episode number 11, Beltane 2009. Hello, I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. We'd like to wish you a very warm welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show.
We would. This is our holiday special for Beltane. And as you know, in our holiday specials, we bring you some music, stories and poetry from modern authors and try to have some fun along the way.
Yes, and in this show, you'll hear five great pieces of music, a little bit of information about the Festival of Beltane, a section from Arlene Radaski's wonderful Celtic novel, The Fox, and some great audio feedback we've had.
Good grief. We better get straight into it then.
Yep. Let's have some news and views.
Our first piece of news is that our website poll for the future direction of the show is now closed, and we have the results. With a grand total of 985 votes, the winner has been decided.
Oh, that was a terrible effect.
Oh, you know I like playing. In third place, we have Arthurian Myth with 19% of the votes. In second place, the Ulster Cycle comes in with a handsome 36.1%. And in first place, we have Welsh Mythology with 37.9% of the votes. So that's where we'll go.
Excellent. We'd like to thank all of you that took the time to vote and will respond to your wishes in telling the stories in the order that you'd like to see them.
Yeah.
A little while back, we had a couple of emails asking us to provide an online shop so you guys could pick up hats and t-shirts and stuff with the Celtic Myth Pod Show logo on it. Well, now we've finally done it.
Yep. We've set this up as a non-profit shop. So the price you pay is purely the price that Cafe Press charge to manufacture the item. None of the money comes back to us. We figure that in these hard times, you need it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find more details in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/show notes.
Brilliant. So, shall we kick off with a piece of music?
Yes, let's do that. This track is called The Rocks of Rodel. And it's a walking song. That's W-A-U-L-K-I-N-G. It's a word I really wasn't familiar with before. But I think it's slang and means working.
Mm.
In the old days, when groups of women would work together, they'd sing tunes like these to keep themselves going. They'd all sing them together.
Sure.
So let's listen to Kiss the Mistress with the Rocks of Rodel.
Hint, hint, kill the Murray, hint, hook, kill the Murray gang, with me to the shore. Hint, kill the Murray, hint, hint, calamari. Good calamari gang, with me to the shop. Fresh dozen mussels, fresh sea, dozen mussels boiling. Fresh dozen mussels by the rocks of Rhoda. Fresh dozen mussels, fresh sea, dozen mussels boiling. Fresh dozen mussels by the rocks of Rhoda. Ink calamari, him. Oh, calamari gang, with me to the shop. Ink calamari, him. Oh, calamari gang, with me to the shop. Birdlings are passing out to sunset to pass and see the birdlings are passing by the rocks of Rhoda. Birdlings are passing out to sunset to pass and see the birdlings are passing by the rocks of Rhoda. Ink calamari, him. Ink calamari, him. Oh, calamari gang, with me to the shop. Ink calamari, him. Ink calamari, him. Oh, calamari gang, with me to the shop.
Was great, wasn't it? It reminded me of when I was a child. We used to go on long walks and my mum would sing and we'd all join in and sing, and the walks never seemed so long. So maybe
really?
That's why women sung songs. Maybe it passed the day faster.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a rhythm thing, isn't it? Mm. The rhythm keeps you going.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us a bit more about the track.
That track, The Rocks of Rhodel, comes from their album About Time, and you can hear more of their cello, accordion and baron playing on their website. Check out the show notes for details.
Yeah. And now, did you know it's Beltane?
yes.
Well, you know what they say.
What's that then?
Hooray, hooray, it's the 1st of May. Outdoor flirting starts today.
Yes, that's a cleaner version than I know. Anyway, it's a beautiful time of year now the sun is back with us. Let's find some answers to some of the most frequently asked questions about Beltane.
Sure. Well, this next section comes from an article on sacred texts. Beltane, its history and modern celebration, by Rowan Moonstone. Beltane. Where does the festival of Beltane originate?
Beltane, as practiced by modern-day witches and pagans, has its origins among the Celtic peoples of Western Europe and the British Isles, particularly Ireland, Scotland and Wales.
What does the word Beltane mean?
Dr. Pontius McKenna defines the word as follows.
The Irish name for May Day is Beltane, which the second element, Dane, is the word for fire, and the first bell means shining or brilliant.
Wow, that's the best Irish accent I've heard you doing. I was seriously impressed by that. Great. Sorry. The festival was known by other names in Celtic countries. Beltane in Ireland, Beltan in Scotland, Shane de Boilding on the Isle of Man, and Galan Mai in Wales.
What was the significance of this holiday to the ancients?
To the ancient Celts, it symbolised the coming of spring. It was the time of year when the crops began to sprout. The animals bore their young and the people could begin to get out of their houses where they'd been cooped up during the long, dark, cold winter months. Keep in mind that the people in those days had no electric lights or heat, and that the Celtic countries are at a much more northerly latitude than many of us are used to, and the winter lasts much longer than in most of the US. the coming of the fair weather and longer daylight hours would be most welcome after a long, cold and dark winter.
How did the ancient Celts celebrate this festival?
The most ancient way of observing this day is with fire. Beltane, along with Samhain, November 1st, Imolc, February the 1st, and Lunacer, August 1st, was one of the four great fire festivals, which marked the turning points of the Celtic year. The most ancient records tell us that the people would extinguish all the hearth fires in the country and then relight them from the need fires lit by the Druids, who used friction as a means of ignition. In many areas, the cattle were driven between two great bonfires to protect them from disease during the coming year. It's my personal belief, although I have no documentation to back up the assumption, that certain herbs would have been burnt in the fire, thus producing smoke which would help destroy parasites which might make the cattle and other livestock ill.
In what other ways was this festival celebrated?
One of the most beautiful customs associated with this festival was bringing in the May. The young people of the villages and towns would go out into the fields and forests at midnight on April 30th and gather flowers with which to bedeck themselves, their families and their homes. They would process back into the villages, stopping each home to leave flowers and to receive the best of food and drink that the home had to offer. This custom, somewhat similar to trick-or-treat at Samhain, was very significant to the ancients. John Williamson, in his study, The Oak King, the Holly King and the Unicorn, writes,
"These revellers were the messengers of the renewal of vegetation, and they assumed the right to punish the niggardly, because avarice, as opposed to generosity, was dangerous to the community's hope for the abundance of nature. At an important time, like the coming of summer, food, the substance of life, must be ritually circulated generously within the community, in order that the cosmic circuit of life's substance may be kept in motion. Trees, flocks, harvests, and so on."
These revellers would bless the fields and flocks of those who were generous and wish ill harvests on those who withheld their bounty.
I see. What about maypoles?
Oh, you don't want to know about them.
Yes, I do.
The maypole was an adjunct to the festival of bringing in the May. It is a phallic symbol and as such represented fertility to the participants in the festival. In olden days, the revellers who went out into the woods would cut a tree and bring it into town, decking it with flowers and greenery, and dance around it clockwise, also called deasil, meaning sunwise, the direction of the sun's apparent travel across the face of the earth, to bring fertility and good luck. The ribbons which we associate with the maypole were a later addition.
So why was fertility important?
The people who originated this custom lived in close connection with the land. If the flocks and the fields were fertile, they were able to eat. If there was famine or drought, they went hungry. It's hard for us today to relate to this concept, but to the ancients, it was literally a life and death matter. The Celts were a very close tribal people, and the fertility of their women literally meant continuity of the tribe.
How is the maypole connected with fertility?
Many scholars see the maypole as a phallic symbol. In this aspect, it is a very powerful symbol of fertility of nature and spring.
How did these ancient customs come down to us?
When Christianity came to the British Isles, many of the ancient holy sites were taken over by the new religion and converted to Christian sites. Many of the old gods and goddesses became Christian saints, and many of the customs were appropriated. Charles Squire says,
"An ingenious theory was invented after the introduction of Christianity, with the purpose of allowing such ancient rites to continue with a changed meaning. The passing of persons and cattle through flame or smoke was explained as a practice which interposed a magic protection between them and the powers of evil."
This is precisely what the original festival was intended to do. Only the definition of evil had changed. These old customs continued to be practiced in many areas for centuries. Christina Hall says,
"In Scotland in 1282, John the priest in Evercethin led the young girls of his parish in a phallic dance of decidedly obscene character during Easter week. For this, penance was laid upon him, but his punishment was not severe. and he was allowed to retain his benefice.
Mm-hmm. Were sacrifices practiced during this festival?
Scholars are divided in their opinions of this. There is no surviving account of sacrifices in the legends and mythology which have come down to us. As these were originally set down on paper by Christian monks, one would think that if such a thing had been regularly practiced, the good brothers would most certainly would have recorded it, if for no other reason than to make the pagans look more depraved. There are, however, some surviving folk customs which point to a person representing the gloom and ill fortune of winter being ostracised and forced to jump through the fires. Some scholars see this as a survival of ancient human sacrifice practices. The notion that animals were sacrificed during this time doesn't make sense from a practical standpoint. The animals which had been retained as breeding stock through the winter would either be lean and hungry from winter feed or would be mothers nursing young, which could not be spared.
Right. How do modern pagans observe this day?
Modern-day pagan observances of Beltane include the maypole dances, bringing in the may, and jumping the cauldron for fertility. Many couples wishing to conceive children would jump the cauldron together at this time. Fertility of imagination and other varieties of fertility are invoked along with sexual fertility. In Wiccan and other pagan circles, this is a joyous day, full of laughter and good times.
Okay, what about Walpurgisnacht or Walpurgisnacht? Is this the same thing as Beltane?
Walpurgisnacht comes from an Eastern European background and has little in common with Celtic practices. I have not studied the folklore from that region and do not consider myself qualified to speak about it. As the vast majority of Wiccan and Druid traditions today stem from Celtic roots, I've confined myself to research in those areas.
Was really informative.
Yes, it was great, wasn't it? I like the question and answer approach. It hit some of the questions I had and brought others up that I hadn't thought about.
Yeah, me too. Now, after all that studying, should we have some more music?
Yes, what have you got?
Well, this is a track called The Banks of Newfoundland by four young men from South Carolina called Boat. So, take it away, guys.
Thank you.
It's been a while since we've heard some great folk, and these guys have a superb sound, don't they?
They do. We're hoping that the Banks of Newfoundland will be on their album Work and Worry, which is scheduled for release this year. Apparently the word boat, that's B-O-T-E, means a recompense or amends. And they've given us super compensation for our time.
Do you know, if your jokes get any worse, I'll be asking you to write for ice cream sticks.
All right then. No more jokes. How about a trip to visit the Dragon's Head in the Highlands to see what old Duncan is up to?
Oh yes, I'd love that. But can you buy the drinks this time?
Yeah, what do you mean? I get them in most of the time. Anyway, we'd like to say a big thank you to Andy Guthrie, our resident Scottish Shanachie, for this tale of Ivor and the White Adder.
Goodness, isn't it a beautiful evening?
Oh, it is. Look at the way the sun is streaming through those trees in the churchyard. It's almost as if the trees were glowing.
I know, it's really beautiful. I just love this time of year. Anyway, let's go and have a drink.
I can't see them anywhere, can you?
No, but there's not too many people here tonight. I'll go and have a look and you get them in.
Okay. Now, there you are. Have you found him yet?
Yes, he's over there.
I can't see him in the crowd around the piper.
He is the piper.
Oh.
Hello, me young friends. How are ye this eve?
We're good, thank you, Duncan. Here's a drink. Looks like you need one.
Aye, that I do.
How are you, Duncan? You're looking good.
Ach, you just have to get in the queue with the other lasses tonight, lassie.
Now, don't start all that again. Get your breath back before you try telling us the story.
Aye, that I will. I want to tell ye the story of Ivor and the White Adder. And ye could learn a thing or two for this tale.
Okay, Duncan.
On Dalmanagh Moor, on the old drover's way to Tom na Shee, is a rock that rises like a great fang out of the purple heather. Some say it's of granite and some marble. Others say it's an unknown substance and believe it's fallen from the moon. Near it is a group of three lesser fang-shaped stones with illegible runic writing or signs. None knows anything for certain of this ancient place. And it was here that Ivor, son of Ivor of the Honeymouth, had taken shelter from the wind, and he was about to sleep, and he heard the sound of pipes playing. He sat up and he was thinking, who could be playing in this place at this time of night? Music comes nearer and nearer, and Ivor, being the great warrior, stands his ground. And then Ivor saw a tall man in clan gear, and his face was death white in the moonlight. His eyes glinted like a salmon's. Ivor knew he was of the Shi, and had come from Tir na n'Uaig. And the piper glided past Ivor and didn't speak to him, and a loud shrilling voice cried, let there be peace, Ivor, for she is coming to this place. And then a woman of great beauty appeared from the great fang, and she says, Let there be peace between us. And then Ivor at we, I do not fear you, white woman, because I am of the race of Ivor. My father was son of Ivor the Red.
I will do you no harm if you do me no harm.
And Ivor, he says, I'll do you no harm, white one that comes from the hill. I've seen you in my dreams. I'm sure it's the beauty of death. And Ivor, hearing a chant in his head, he begins to chant. Today is the day of breed. Today the daughter of Ivor will come from the hill. And I'll nay touch the daughter of Ivor, and nor will the daughter of Ivor touch me. And Ivor bowed low and sang again. From the breed of the fair locks comes that noble queen, come from the heel. I will nae touch her, and she'll nae touch me. And then at that, a giant white adder came from the great fang, and Ivar lifted his pipes and played, and he played a tune he'd nae heard before. It was a strange and carolling bit of music, and was so sweet in all its wildness. Ivar found himself dancing a reel and snapping his fingers, and then there was a cold screech that rose across the heather, and the call of a snipe. All was silent. And Ivar found himself lying on the heather, looking up at the stars. And breath came over him, a breath like incense. Now you will be with me, Ivar. Ivar be with breath on the mantle, and she kisses him. And the next day, Ivar's body was found, naked, and his pipes broken, and his lips were blue and swollen. And a warrior was heard to say, "It's an adder bite."
Oh, that was a spooky story, Duncan.
Brilliant story, though. Thank you. Another lesson to think about.
Aye, that it be, laddie. Now, I've had a wee rest, and it is time for some mare piping.
Thank you again, Duncan.
Yes, Duncan, thank you, and good night.
And good night to you, young'uns.
That was wonderful, wasn't it?
Yes, and he's a superb storyteller. And talking of wonderful Celtic landscapes with its hills and rocks, we've a poem now written and performed by Cindy Ross after a visit to Ireland called The Celtic World Revisited. She even has a photograph that she took in Ireland, which you can find in the show notes. Here she performs the poem with backing by Iona's The Search.
Dwellings, fortresses, archaeological remnants, ruins in stone. What are these but the visible things you were made of? You left your prints, your lines and curves, defying eye and linear flow. Where was your beginning and where now your end? With primitive tools, this modern age has tried to decipher your ways, your epitaphs. You were a people not understood, a civilization built on why, not how, who never wanted to harness nature, but only penetrate the mysteries of the unseen realm. You had no palaces, but favored kings. Your home was an earthen floor, a pasture, a forest, the sky, with all its unlimited wonderings. Money had no value, but story, words, soul utterings pass between you like priceless gifts. It was you who dreamed the plowshare into form, the visionary symbol of the artist man. Now, upon these graphic pages, I search your artifacts, your grave remains. I close my eyes, and I am there beneath the black rings, watching an incense rise. Memory of tingling gold, moments of shimmering moon, dances of life hugging the bitter cold. And I hear a voice, ethereal and pure, your simple song escaping stone, slipping through the secret trees, through the glorified imaginings of mind and pen. Out of the endless circle of dust, the vast entanglements of time, prayer spill from the golden bowl, filling your ancient grounds with light. O passionate wanderer, look up and see. Spirit dances in your midst as you reach out, even now, to grasp the spiraling star.
She captured the tragedy and the loss of our ancestors perfectly.
And the quest to understand them again.
That's right.
So, are you ready to bring us all the story then?
Sure am. Would you like to introduce it?
We've already played a promo for Arlene Radusky's podcast novel The Fox, so many of you might already be familiar with this wonderful tale of the ancient Celts. Now we're privileged to bring you an excerpt from this book that is available in print from Amazon. It's the tale of a first century druid, his family, and the modern archaeologist who tracks them down. A tale stretching across the centuries. In this excerpt, we learn about the druid Laverne, who is also known as the Fox.
Laverne, 72 AD, November. The fascinating young woman Jana, who danced in front of me last night, left me reeling in confusion. It was my first night in the company of men in the many nights of my journey, and I was exhausted. While I lay on the floor, she came close enough to allow me to smell the lavender from her hair. They sang to praise the stories of their Cian Kene. I played to entice a glance from her. Bethan expected me to stay for the Samhain ceremony. Now I had to stay not only for the ceremony, but to find out why the gods led me here. For I am druid. The gods and goddesses talk to me. They spoke to me last night. After my meal of bread and mead, I required quiet hours to purify myself, to allow my songs to rise to the gods. The young dancer guided me to the stable. I asked, and when she told me her name, my legs weakened. I shuddered. My thoughts had been invaded by her twice before. In the dreams, she looked through my eyes. She was there at the hunt for my namesake, the Fox. And again after the sacred sacrifice to stop the Roman invaders. Could I be in danger here with her? Her name, Jana, haunted me for years. I undertook this journey to survive. The gods guided my steps. It was a search for her. I circled the goats and ponies, secure in the warmth of their bodies. I'd walked for many nights, wary of the unknown. Tonight was not an exception. Oh, I wished to speak with my teacher, Conan, but could not. He'd been captured by the Romans and was now a slave. I mourned my loss of contact with him. Jana left me her cloak. I wrapped myself in it to know her. Her scent, lavender, some herbs for cooking, and some unknown to me, lay heavy on the wall. I reached into my bag and took my stones into my hand. Three times I traced the path of the labyrinth. My mind calmed, ready to hear the gods. I covered my face with her cloak and opened my mind to those who wished to speak. The goats bleated. The ponies neighed, and one came close enough to warm my neck with his breath. The gods and goddess came, surrounded in light. I spoke to them. You've guided my hands to be able to heal. You've calmed my spirit when I've been in question about the needs of others. I have a need. Why was I led here? I interpreted the music of their answers in my vision. Lou spoke first.
Laverne, you are tired. Your mind is heavy with indecision. Here you may sleep and renew your body for the morrow. Then you must decide whether to go or stay in this village. Your journey may be complete if you choose to stay. But understand, danger is never out of sight. There is death hanging over these people.
Arwan, the god of my underworld, the one I call on every Samhain, spoke next in a coarse, deep voice.
Your journey may end here, or it may continue if you choose to go. If you go, you will meet and learn from many more people, but your heart will remain unfulfilled. If you stay, you will learn why your paths crossed here. It is for you to choose.
And then three voices woven into one, the Queen Moregna sternly said,
Hear me, mortal. Fear me if you stray. You are commanded to teach the one who carries the blood of her people. You are commanded to guide the one who will soften the paths of the dying. You will mark the day of her marriage. It will not be to the chosen one. She holds the dreams of your future in her hands. It is to Jana I commit you. Jana is your burden. You may choose to leave and wander alone for eternity. You may choose to stay and learn to love and cry. It is your choice.
I listened. The gods gave me directions. I gave my life to the gods. I am druid. The night was long. My blood boiled. The gods had spoken, and the task of finding Jana's connection to the gods had fallen on me. If I stayed, I knew not whether the dangers that Lou described were caused by her or directed to her. I must act carefully until I made my decision. My body overheated. I threw her cloak off and removed my shirt. As night ended, I stood by the pony that carried me yesterday. And then she came, Jana. She brought warm, cleansing water, and we talked. To start our journey, I told her the gods have crossed our paths, one over the other. I watched as she ran away. I wondered what was in her heart, why she ran. But I didn't have time to wonder long. Bethan lunged noisily into the stable, his hair brushed back, his chest bare. His plaid cape was fastened around his shoulders and hung over his yellow breki, covering tree trunk-like legs. His boots were long and laced with a length of red hide. He hawked and spat at his rooster. He ran as if familiar with his morning routine.
Did you pass the night well, Druid?
He growled. An extra plaid cloak hung off the crook of his elbow. Blessings is modern to you. May the goddess ride on your shoulders today.
You can ride if she can hold on. I expect a fine ceremony and a full harvest for the next year. I've got her a gentle ending to this god's forsaken dark season. Storms have been hard this year.
I will ask. I cannot promise.
Ah, ye priests never promise anything. I found the gods listen to those who please them the most. I pray you, please them.
He turned away from me, laid the cloak on a rail, and threw a handful of grain to his goats. They stumbled over themselves trying to get it.
Handfasts will be announced today after you speak. The couples will marry soon. A good way to start a new season of growth. The young woman who danced in my home last night, Jungla, is one of them.
He turned to his ponies and gathered the harness for the chariot into his massive arms. The rattle of the metal buckles blended with the morning call of the roosters and the prattle of waking people outside the stable.
Plentiful harvests and ample butchering is what I ask. We must give a bull to Arwan and Maregna today,
he said as he lifted the harness over the pony's withers. Is Jana going to be handfasted to one you choose?
Aye, he is my kin. I chose a good match for her. I did well.
And even though he did not face me, I imagined his smile. He was proud to be the chieftain and make these decisions. He had chosen for her. This was what the goddess meant. She was not to marry the chosen one. Now I must convince this mountain of a man that the marriage was not to happen. Kian kine, Bethan. I beg you to listen well. The goddess spoke with me about Jana last night. Bethan stopped buckling the harness, stood to his full height and turned to me, questions in his hooded eyes as he measured me from head to toe. I stood tall, still covered by his shadow. The goddess Moraigna ordered Jana not to be betrothed today. I stepped in front of the pony so Bethan could not leave the dark stable until he absorbed the goddess's words. I was ready to fight for the goddess's demand. I do not know what the goddess Moraigna's plan is for Jana's future, but I know I must be involved. His body tensed. A low growl came from his throat.
What do you mean you must be involved? You've just arrived. What do you know of Jana?
Jana is the reason I am here. My journey was a long one, and many dangers were involved. I left to avoid death, but arrived here by the calling of the gods. And last night they told me that Jana is the reason I am here. I do not know more than that. The grey, early morning light hid his eyes. I could not assure him with mine that I spoke the truth. I silently prayed, Moraigna, whisper in his ear. Tell him I speak with your words. I said, the goddess led me here, but I do not know what she plans. I must study Jana, know her, and then the goddess will guide me. Bethan did not move. Even his breathing seemed to stop. I strained not to speak until he answered. His jaw clenched and his eyes closed. Then his eyes opened slowly and trapped mine.
Sometimes this goddess asks the impossible. Why you? Why not one of my warriors?
That is the answer I will give you after I've spent time with Jana. She's the one who holds the truth to these questions. She is the one the goddess will speak through. I must learn if she has the clan's goodwill at heart.
The clan's goodwill? The clan's goodwill? What do you know of my clan's goodwill? We fought hard to have our little bit of peace. Jana was born of my sister, and during her lifetime, no ill has come to the clan. Why would this change?
Good chieftain, I do not say there is harm coming to the clan. I only know I must find out why I'm here. The gods have given me a choice, and I choose to stay. After a long moment of silence, Bethan's face hardened into an iron mask.
I will do as the gods ask. You are a priest. You must speak the truth on Samhain. But know this, druid. She is of my family, and if you harm her without talking to me first, I will have your head on my wall.
The pony's ears stood up as it felt Bethan's hands stiffen on its back.
She is your millstone while you are here.
I will not harm her without your permission. Betrothed, the man Jana was to marry to another woman. Jana will not marry him.
Harald,
Bethan said as if just remembering the name.
He did want to marry the farm girl, Silius. I'll announce it today.
He pointed his large hand at me and said,
I warn you. Do not anger me. You do not scare me, priest. I'll hunt you like a dog if I decide to kill you.
I do only what the goddess wishes me to, I said, bowing my head. I must find out why the girl Jana invaded my mind. Now I had Bethan's permission to talk to her, to question her, to know her.
We will ready my chariot. You ride with me. My sons will come on their ponies. Where are this?
He threw the plaid to me as he led the pony outside.
We'll go soon.
I swung the cloak over my shoulders and fastened it with the acorn-topped pin attached to it. I slung my bag over my neck and, when Bethan called, climbed into the chariot, his sons on either side. We passed Jana, her mother, and a young man I guessed to be Harald. I did not look at Jana. To be prepared for the ceremony, my mind must be free from outside thoughts. I was to perform the sacrifice of the Samhain giving fire. My mind was clear. I meditated on my songs. I did not think of Jana again until later. At the ceremony field, there were two stacks of oak logs far enough apart to allow the passage of people and animals. The clan gathered and talked among themselves excitedly. Most were wearing the plaid that Jana had woven. It was the first time I'd seen a clan dressed in the same colours. I felt the strength of the bond it created as I looked over the clan. Bethan was right to ask all to wear it as a sign of brotherhood and fealty. I walked to the sacred circle, drawn around the piles of wood, and waited. The crowd began to call for the ceremony to begin. The men led the bull to me.
"Here is the earthen vessel to be used in the ceremony," said Finley, handing me the small pottery cup that would hold the blood of the sacrifice.
I crossed to the bellowing sacrificial bull. Two grown men hung onto ropes fastened to its neck. Its front legs hobbled. Frightened eyes rolled and froth flung from its mouth as it tried to escape. I laid my hand on its forehead and looked deep into its eyes. It calmed as I spoke.
"I call the god Arwan and the goddess Moregna to attend our ceremony and ask the blessings of both to fall on the clan, the harvests, and the animals. I thank you, sacred bull, for giving your life today. You will call the gods to us and have them hear our prayers."
I raised my dirk to the sky and plunged it into the bull's neck. Its blood spurted into the cup that I held against its straining neck. He flew into a rage and blood sprayed, covering my arms. Two more men leapt forward to further restrain the enraged bull. I drank and passed the cup to Bethan. He drank. The blood was warm and tasted of metal. I heard the call of the birds over the bull's screams and looked up. The sky over us was black with ravens.
"This is the sign of Moregna. The queen is here and blesses the clan,"
I shouted, and I raised my bloody arms to the ravens. The crowd cheered and then quieted as they began to feel the tension of the next few moments. If the sacrifice did not go well, the clan would feel the wrath of the gods. I nodded to Finley to carry up the sacred sword. He stood, the bull's shoulders at his chest, raised it, and plunged it into its back. The sword pierced its heart. The bull raised its head as if surprised, fell to its knees, and then as we raced out of the way, rolled to its side with a huff. Dead. A good sacrifice. I told the gathered clan, "The peaceful death of the bull is the sign the god Arwan is here. He will bring good hunting and good harvest for next year." There were cheers and shouts of happiness among the people. Bethan walked forward and commanded attention with raised arms. He shouted to the muttering crowd,
"To celebrate the coming planting season of the clan, we will have marriages. I betroth Moira and Clyde."
He raised his hands for the couple to come forward. I heard shouts of congratulations.
"Gara and Lyle."
Again I heard wishes of good luck and a healthy family.
"Haralt and..."
My eyes searched and found Jana, next to Haralt on her tiptoes, steadying herself on his arm. He seemed to be pulling away from her.
"Haralt and Silius."
The crowd grew quiet. Jana jumped when Bethan finished the announcement, and then stood still. She stared as Haralt walked to a young woman I assumed was Silius and kissed her. I watched Jana turn and run towards the lake. After a moment of stunned silence, the crowd cheered again. Haralt, a grin on his face, did not notice as Silius's eyes followed Jana with concern. I could not follow Jana. This was the goddess's moment. I stayed to light the Samhain fire. What a strong scene. The tale begins to unfold. All starting, really, at Samhain.
But it's Beltane now. Well, at least it is in the Northern Hemisphere.
True, but it's Samhain in the Southern Hemisphere, and we've got a bit more on that later on.
Good stuff. Thank you so much, Arlene, for that wonderful section from The Fox. The Fox is available both as a print novel and a podcast from Podio Books. More details can be found in the show notes. I loved it because I felt the people in it were in touch with their land and their gods.
And what I found refreshing was that all of her imagery and language in the Celtic sections comes from that period. It's completely immersive. Definitely well worth catching up on. And now, with the fields and the trees going that wonderful shade of green all around us, Let's peep through the trees to see if we can see Jack in the Green by Todd Allen.
Now winter is over, I'm happy to say it, and we're all met again in our ribbon so gay, and we're all met again on the first day of spring to go about dancing with Jack. Trees that I've met, our garden still glowed with his jacket so red, but I feel he will sew with the hair on his head. Our green it will ripen till old Jack is dead. Old Jack is dead. Old Jack is dead.
I really want to dance now. That was Jack in the Green by Todd Allen from his album Earth Changes. He says that the album is dedicated to the environment, global warming and our spiritual connection with Mother Earth.
Well, you can't say fairer than that.
No, you can't. His other albums look great as well. You can find out more information about Todd in our show notes and on his contributor page. What did you have in mind to follow that then?
Well, I thought we'd have some listener feedback.
Idea.
All of the feedback in this holiday special is audio feedback.
Oh, excellent. We get to hear your voices.
Yeah, I love the way it makes us feel so much closer to you. So, who do we have first?
Well, our first caller is Liz from Maryland, and she says...
Hello, my name is Liz. I'm a new listener to your show. I'm from the United States, the state of Maryland, and I've been enjoying your show. I've listened to like 3 or 4 episodes. And my question for you is, I have a 7-year-old son, and I would like to read some Celtic myths to him. And I was wondering if you all recommended any particular book or author or translation for specifically a 7-year-old child. So that's my question, and I hope you answer it, and I'm looking forward to your next episode. Thank you very much. Bye.
Oh, that's a brilliant question.
Yes, I've been thinking about this, and after a little bit of searching, I think the kind of thing you're looking for is a book called Celtic Tales and Legends by Nicola Baxter. I'll put the publisher and ISBN in the show notes for you.
Great, great. Just before we went to record this, I came across another one as well. I don't know whether you've seen this one yet, but it's called Tales from Old Ireland. And it's by Malachy Doyle with illustrations by Niamh Sharkey. Looks really good. And it comes with a CD as well.
Oh, excellent. We'll have to see if we can get hold of that.
Yeah, and I'll stick the details in the show notes. So we hope that helps, Liz. Thank you so much for your message and your good wishes. It was lovely to hear from you. And hope you enjoy the rest of the shows.
We also heard from Dave from Sacramento, California. And he says,
"Hey, Gary and Ruth. This is Dave Shorey from Sacramento, California, over the pond here in the United States. I just wanted to call and let you guys know that you are just absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for sending me a birthday greeting. You know, I know that you all spend many hours working on the podcast and all that is related to it. So to receive a birthday greeting from you is just really special. So thank you. I also wanted to just say thanks for the great work that you guys do. You know, your podcast is just so valuable and important. Not only are many like myself being able to connect with the great Celtic tales in a way that is both personal and intimate, but, you know, you're doing just a great service to the art of storytelling. You know, in this world of chat and tweet and quick emails, storytelling and the art of the written and spoken word seems to be just kind of crumbling. What you do reinforces the fact that there is worth in what and how something is written, and also how it is performed or presented. You know, our world whizzes around us so quickly that we lose sight of the details. By providing us the opportunity to sit, listen, and ignite our imagination to visualize the spoken word that you present, we're really forced to slow down and smell the proverbial coffee, or tea as the case may be for you over the pond. This in turn allows us to connect with our intimate humanity, which is no small task indeed. So thank you. Thank you so very much, and I wish to offer my greatest respect and admiration to you and all those who help you with putting on the podcast. I bid you peace. Thank you."
Oh, wow. Thank you, Dave. That's really sweet of you. And you're right. I'll drink tea anytime. Thank you.
Although I'm with you on the coffee, Dave. I'm pleased you enjoyed the birthday wishes. You're most welcome.
Yes, we really hope you had a lovely birthday.
And thank you so much for your kind words about the show. That's such high praise.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much, Dave. Like you, we believe that storytelling is something that's vitally important to a healthy internal life. As you say, it sort of connects us to our humanity. Our spiritual side, if you like.
That's true. Humans are all natural storytellers, you know. You go to the shops, you meet a friend, and before you know it, you're swapping stories. And when those stories last for thousands of years, we know they are telling us great truths.
Yes, so thank you very much, Dave, and we wish you peace as well.
Peace, Dave.
As we've got a couple more pieces of feedback to play you, we're going to take a short break and bring you our last piece of music for the season. This superb piece of music is a wonderful tale of the meeting of ways, as performed by the astounding Dave the Bard.
Thank you. Around the 1st of May, a man in black came walking into a woodland glade, following the sounds of pipes on this beautiful spring day, high from the music that they made. But what beheld him within that place? A look of recognition fell across his face. Oh Lucifer, oh Lucifer, why do you appear to me? For I am a man of God, a priest. I'm no devil, I'm far. God, now go back to the fires of hell. You fell from heaven and you fell from grace. You want dominion over this place. The piper smiled to the priest, he said, I was lord of animals, the wild hunt I led, until your God came here and with his jealous hand, it was he who wanted dominion over this land. For I'm no devil, I'm father to the land. I have been here since the earth began. Neither black nor said, if evil is where it lies in the hearts of man, but you lead us, oh you tempt us, to rape, to steal, to kill. The piper said, whatever happened to free will? Then the grove lay empty, the priest told no one, the blossom lay upon the thorn, and the piper's tune was done. And in the sunlit forest, the animals they bowed, as the piper laid his goddess down. For I'm no devil, I'm father to the land. I have been here since the earth began. Neither black nor white, priest, hear what I say. I'm green and gray. I'm green and gray. I'm green and gray. I'm green and gray.
What did you think of that one?
I think it works on so many levels. Thank you, Dave, for allowing us to play such a powerful song, and blessings of the season to you.
Talking of Dave, he came up with a great idea on Druidcast, you know.
He did? What was that?
He said to his listeners that when they call in and leave feedback, don't worry about making mistakes. He'll edit them out. That way people will be more relaxed about calling.
Oh, what a good idea. Let's do that as well. So if you make a mistake when calling us, don't worry because we'll edit them out as well.
Brilliant. Let's listen to the next call, which is from our friend Stephen from South Florida. Stephen maintains a list of Celtic music that's been played on Celtic podcasts, and you can find a link to his work on our site.
Hey, Gary and Ruth. This is your fan, Stephen, from South Florida. I hadn't listened to your latest episode before today, but when I was listening to the latest of Mark Gunn's Irish and Celtic Music podcast, I heard your familiar voices. So this evening, I listened to your latest while updating my Celtic podcast playlist. Mark had mentioned another Celtic music podcast, Celtic Roots Radio, which I hadn't heard of before. I was sorry to hear about the loss of Ruth's cousin and really liked the way you chose to celebrate him. I'm sure that he would have enjoyed the send-off if he really had the sense of humor Ruth credited him with. As always, thanks for everything and keep up the wonderful work.
Thank you so much for your kind words, Stephen, and we'll certainly have to check Celtic Roots Radio out.
Yes, we will. Thank you for your thoughts about Brian, Stephen. They're much appreciated.
And lastly, we have some voice feedback from Paulette Jackson.
Oh, is that Paulette from Form Letter Rejection Theatre?
That's right. Paulette has a podcast of her own, and we'll play a promo a bit later on. But she's been kind enough to record a lovely piece for us. See what you think.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Ruth. It's Paulette Jackson. I know I'm long overdue in sending you some feedback, so I thought I might relate my recent experience listening to your Spring Equinox show. Last weekend we were having such wonderful spring weather here in the Mid-Atlantic states that I decided to take a long stroll in the nature park near my home. No sooner had I taken to the wooded trails when my iPod started playing your show. It turned out to be the perfect background for my walk. The smaller trees were just starting to bud with millions of tiny yellow-green dots all around me, while behind them the looming hulks of one of America's oldest surviving hardwood forests watched, still and stark in their winter mantle. The bright spring sun dappled the path before me with golden light as your tales and songs filled my ears and touched my heart. I was especially taken with the story by Willie Meikle. His touching tale beautifully reminded me that each of us experiences this journey of life differently. Where others might have chosen to take their last steps with an angel or the spirit of a loved one long since passed, the woman in this story applied her lifelong belief and love of fairy to turn life's final and most frightening trip into a triumphant passage into the night, one filled with wonder and joy, which you punctuated nicely with the song Children of Lear by Sora. The tale brought tears to my eyes and put a grin on my face that simply would not go away for hours afterwards. I love your seasonal specials, and I hope that you continue to produce them for years to come. Your blend of informative news and history, beautiful Celtic music, and delightful tales both old and new always makes me smile, whether I'm listening during my long daily commute to work or while walking deep within an awakening forest. The Celtic Myth Pod Show is like a familiar old friend come to keep me company. Please do take care of yourselves and continue to carry on.
That was beautiful. Thank you, Paulette. I'm really pleased you enjoy the show so much.
Me too. Thank you so much, Paulette. It does feel like we're in a circle of old friends doing this show, doesn't it?
Yes, and isn't she a beautiful writer?
She is. In her stories, I think my favourite is the one called Divine Fire that she wrote about a fire priestess in hiding.
Well, that sounds good. Tell us about her show.
Well, she presents short stories that she's written in a podcast called Form Letter Rejection Theatre. So, let's have a listen to the promo.
Welcome to Lesson 16 of Learn Something New, 365 lessons that teach you something new every day. Today, we will learn how to handle rejection. Step 1, sit still and take a deep breath. By taking a deep breath, this means you will have ample amounts of air to fuel the uncontrollable sobbing that is just on the horizon. Step 2, clench your hands into fists and continue to clench until the stinging sensation turns to a burning one. You'll be inflicting so much pain on yourself, you'll forget entirely about the rejection. Step 3, close your eyes and picture an open field with daisies, wildflowers, and heather. Picture the individual or individuals responsible for the rejection and allow them to roam in this tranquil setting. Then add to this field a variety of landmines. And finally, step 4, produce a podcast. They not only serve as artistic outlets, but cheap group therapy. To find out more about how to turn that frown upside down or punch someone in the face for actually suggesting you do so, subscribe to Form Letter Rejection Theater at flrtpodcast.com. This concludes Lesson 16, How to Handle Rejection. See you tomorrow for Lesson 17, Folding Roadmaps.
Sadly, she hasn't released an episode for a while, but I think that's because she's working hard on another project. I don't know what it is, though.
Exciting stuff. Well, I guess that almost wraps it up for us, this Beltane.
Almost. Except we'd like to mention that to you guys in the Southern Hemisphere, you are heading into the Festival of Samhain, a time of reflection.
Oh, yes, that's true. I guess it's kind of like the way that when it's daylight here, it's nighttime on the other side of the globe. Summer for us and winter for them.
It's often confusing how the seasons work. I was listening to a great podcast from the Southern Hemisphere the other way called The Geek Witch that explained exactly how and why this happens. The show's presented by Talia Moonwater and she generally does a herb segment followed by a main topic. But in show number 11, she talks about how they celebrate the festivals in the Southern Hemisphere.
That sounds good. Let's have a listen to the promo.
Hey, this is Talia from the Geek Witch podcast. I'm a Wiccan from Down Under, talking paganism from a nerdy point of view. Find the Geek Witch podcast at geekwitch.org or get it on iTunes, Podcast Alley, or Podcast Pickle. I look forward to seeing you there. Blessed be.
Thank you, Talia. Now that really is it for this show.
Yes, it is. And we'd like to wish you all a really wonderful Beltane and springtime. Enjoy all those new projects and plans. And those in the Southern Hemisphere, enjoy your quiet time.
So, we wish you safe travels, and until the next show...
Slongavoil. The Celts were very close to tribal people, and the fertility of their women...
What? The Celts were very close to tribal people? A particular tribe in question? Or...
or each other, or... Yes. Prunicius? McKenna.
Prunicius? Prunicius? Okay.
Prunicius? I know why you give me this bloody line.
Is Jana going to be hand-farted to one you hand-farted?
I can't send that out on the airwaves.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You heard Haghole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkenstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.